nothing's gonna stop me. I know what they're doing is the wrong thing, the government and the police, and what I'm doing is lawful. What I'm doing is something I'm doing for my own people, for the Palestinian people's right to self-determination, to have an independent state, to have the rights, their full rights, basic rights that are being violated on a daily basis in Palestine.
Welcome to The World Unspun. My name's Paula Lacey. I'm the editorial assistant at New Internationalist, and I'll be your host for this week's episode. You've just heard the words of Samar Alkhdour, a mother and activist from Gaza, now living in Montreal. Since it began in March, her one-woman protest against the Canadian immigration system's failure to resettle Gazans fleeing genocide has become a citywide solidarity movement. It's also put her in the crosshairs of Canada's criminal justice system. When Samar left Palestine for the US in 2017 on a Fulbright scholarship to study a master's, her husband was denied permission to leave Gaza by the Israeli authorities. Unable to support her three young children alone, Samar made the decision to leave her eldest daughter, Jana, in the care of her husband in Gaza.
Now, I've been trying for 5 years, even before the genocide, to bring Jana from Gaza. And it's a long process. It's really painful. And it did not work because there are like delays and waiting lists and stuff.
Jana was born with cerebral palsy, so the process of organizing safe, legal, and accessible passage to Canada was long and arduous. When Samar's husband was able to join her in 2018, Jana had to remain in Gaza. When the family then relocated to Montreal in 2019, Samar hoped that she could finally reunite with her daughter and began the process of applying for a Canadian visa for Jana. Even in times of relative peace in Gaza, it was difficult for Samar and her family to ensure that Jana's complex health needs were met. After Israel launched its genocidal campaign on Gaza following the 7th of October Hamas attacks, it became nearly impossible for Samar's family to access her specialized food and medication. In January 2024, Samar received word from the government that Jana had been granted a green light to join her family in Montreal. But the call came too late. 2 weeks earlier, Jana had passed away due to malnutrition. She was just 13 years old. Racked with grief, Samar started doing daily sit-ins outside the office of Mark Miller, the Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship of Canada, otherwise known as the IRCC. This is when I first came across Samar's story. I watched online as her peaceful protest continued throughout the Canadian winter and then through the summer, every day without fail.
Good morning, everyone. Here I am again for the fourth day doing my sit-in.
So good morning, everyone. This is day 16 of these daily sit-in.
Good morning, everyone. This is me, Samar Alkhdour, and I'm outside Mark Miller's office for day 28.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Samar Alkhdour, again, giving you an update about the sit-in. So today is day 64 of the daily.
Good morning, everyone. This is me, Samar Alkhdour, again.
So it's day 241 of the genocide being committed.
I met Samar in October 2024 whilst I was in Montreal. We sat in a restaurant just around the corner from Mark Miller's office in downtown Montreal, so you may hear some background noise during our conversation. Samar had taken a short break from her sit-in to come and talk to me, whilst a small group of her supporters continued the protest outside.
So to have Jana being murdered in Gaza due to the inaction of the Canadian government and their disregard to my request, like for years to bring her here, was really frustrating for me. So that was the motivation for me to start the sit-in because, number one, my daughter was, you know, killed due to their, you know, bureaucratic system and the immigration department. And number two, the program that Mark Miller announced in January this year was designed in a way to make it impossible for the Palestinians from Gaza to come to Canada.
In January, Mark Miller announced a Special Measures Temporary Resident Visa, or a TRV, program for Gazans.
Today, I am announcing new temporary immigration measures to support family members of Canadians and permanent residents from Gaza, as well as Israelis and Palestinians already in Canada.
A similar program had been introduced for Ukrainians fleeing the Russian invasion in 2022, Although this program was announced too late to save Jana's life, at first it seemed to be a beacon of hope for families like Samar's. But, as Samar says, the TRV program is deeply flawed and unfair.
We've been, all of us as Palestinians, waiting for real action from Canada regarding the Palestinians in Gaza. And that's the job of the immigration, since they offered a program for the Ukrainians when that conflict happened between Ukraine and Russia. We're expecting them to do the same for the Palestinians.
When the program was first announced, the number of visas available to Gazans with family in Canada was just 1,000. It was then raised to 5,000 in May. But, according to a Reuters report, as of October 2024, less than 700 applications have been approved and barely 300 Palestinians have safely relocated to Canada. A lawyer cited in the report said the TRV for Gazans contained, quote, an inordinate amount of barriers and hurdles. Applying for a TRV is long and complex. For Gazans, it's particularly difficult. The IRCC application requires a wealth of personal information and documents, including decades of employment history. This is impossible to obtain for most Palestinians. It also requires biometric information. But with no IRCC centres in Gaza, applicants must then travel to a nearby country, usually Egypt, and then remain there in limbo as their applications are processed. This can take months. Applicants must also be living in the Gaza Strip at the time of application. So while Samar has now been able, with the help of the Montreal community, to raise enough money to move her sister's family to relative safety in Egypt, they are no longer eligible to apply for a TRV. I asked Samar what other barriers she had faced in navigating the Canadian immigration system on behalf of her family.
I mean, number one, and it's something I experienced myself, and I know that a lot of people deal with, like immigrants in Canada. And I hate just to use the word immigrants, but I have to use it. It's like every time an immigrant tries to bring family members, it takes years waiting for their files to be processed and stuff, up to 5-10 years sometimes. So this I was aware about, but I was trying hard to, you know, make it go faster for Jenna because she's a minor, she was handicapped, and she posed no threat to the community here. So there was no reason for them to, for 5 years, just, you know, process her file. The whole immigration system is not functional. And they don't care about, like, what our family members that are left behind are going through, what we are going through, like me as a mother, to be separated from my daughter, who's in desperate need for love and care, and a lot of, like, her needs were not met. That was heart, you know, breaking. And then when that genocide started, I was like, maybe they could help. I reached out to my deputy in the neighborhood, and he was super racist in a way that we went to talk to him about, like, a personal story and asking him for help. And he was, like, blaming the Palestinians for what's happening, and it's Hamas who started all of that, and that there's, like, a waiting list, and he can't move file, like, up. So for me, I was expecting more cooperation, especially in times of emergencies like this. And, you know, again, she's a child. This disregard to our suffering being Palestinians, while I saw how they dealt with the Ukrainians, no conditions at all imposed on them. A lot of benefits were offered to them financially and otherwise. That's infuriating for me, and it's still happening, like all the support and help given to the Ukrainians until this moment, which is amazing. But why having these double standards and racism and discrimination against us Palestinians? I mean, I know the answer, but to experience this, like, firsthand is driving me crazy. I would say the immigration system works for certain people, not for everyone.
Since I spoke to Samar in October, it's become clearer and clearer that the TRV program is not just non-functional, but saturated with anti-Palestinian and anti-Arab racism. In November, more than 40 civil society organizations, including Palestinian Canadian Congress and the Canadian Council for Refugees, penned an open letter to the IRCC, calling for urgent changes to be made to the TRV process. David Mazzine of Amnesty International Canada said,
"Even as relentless bombardment continues, is a tragedy and prompts a chilling question. Was this program deliberately designed to fail?
A report by the Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East notes that the requirements placed on Ukrainian TRV applicants are far more lax than those placed on Palestinians. Unlike Palestinians, Ukrainians who want to flee to Canada do not need family ties to the country, or a passport, or to undergo rigorous and invasive security screenings. Russia does not have the final say in whether Ukrainians can leave occupied territory, unlike Egypt and Israel, who can block any applicant from leaving Gaza. The Ukrainian TRV program has an approval rate of 80%, and nearly 1 million applications have been granted since 2022. Over 300,000 Ukrainians have arrived safely in Canada, yet only 300 of the more than 9,000 Palestinian applications have been approved since January 2024. In March, after months of appealing to the IRCC for help with her attempts to bring her remaining family in Gaza to safety, Samar started her daily sit-ins. She sat outside Mark Miller's office, in a plastic folding chair, Palestine flag in hand, through the harsh Montreal winter. Her story soon gained traction on social media, and people began to join her.
I've got a lot of support. And for me, it's really amazing because when I started the sit-in outside Mark Miller's office, I just went by myself with two signs and sat there. There was no media attention. There was nothing. I was posting about this on Instagram, and then I got all that attention from the community, from the different neighborhoods for Palestine. And this is how the sit-in grew and expanded. Now, I'm working in collaboration with all these groups for Palestine, with like the big movements like Palestinian Youth Movement in Montreal and Montreal for Palestine and other groups to amplify what I'm doing and keep it alive. And honestly, there's a lot of people, like individuals, who show up. They're not part of any movement. They're just, I'd say, and this is what people tell me, it's not my opinion about it, it's like they join my own movement to support. And this is beautiful because I'm doing my sit-ins. This is my own action, and it's not under anyone's umbrella. And that makes it genuine and powerful, and it's a safe space for everyone that joins.
Hi there. My name is Maxine, and I'm the digital editor here at New Internationalist. Those of you that read our magazine will know our upfront news section, Currents. Well, I'm thrilled to let you know that Currents is now available as an exclusive newsletter. Sent straight to your inbox twice a week, Currents brings you more of our original journalism, offering fresh takes on global stories, workers' struggles, new technology, upcoming elections, and social movements. We tell the stories that the mainstream media sidesteps and offer a platform for the people at the heart of those stories. Each edition of Currents also includes details on who to follow, what to read, how to get involved, and other ways to support the progressive issues that matter most to you. Featured this week are stories on Israeli settler attacks on Palestinian olive farmers and a photo essay of Panama's sinking islands. Sign up now via the link in our show notes to get your first month of Currents for free. After that, it's just £3 a month. Subscribers to New Internationalist can get this newsletter included as part of their subscription, absolutely free. Thanks for your support, and we hope you enjoy this all-new offering from us.
As the months passed and the genocide continued, the scope of Samar's protests expanded. When we spoke in October, she was running a tight daily schedule. Mornings at Mark Miller's office, afternoons at the busy downtown branch of the Indigo bookstore, and closing the evening at the gates of McGill University.
I did Mark Miller's sit-in for months, and then I came to a kind of like conclusion that I need to do more. And at some point, it's not just Mark Miller and the immigration that's complicit in what's happening to the Palestinians. It's the whole government, the Canadian government. So I plan to target other either MPs offices or like other businesses that are deeply complicit in the genocide. I'm doing Indigo because they are funding a charity that recruits soldiers across the globe and especially in Canada to go fight in the Israeli army. And it's a bookstore. It doesn't make any sense. So I'm trying to hit where it hurts financially for these businesses. And also for McGill, they are investing in arms companies that, again, are complicit in the genocide, and they sell arms to Israel. That's why I changed my tactics, and it's a daily sit-in I'm doing because the genocide is still happening.
The founders of Indigo, Heather Reisman and Jerry Swartz, established the HESEG Foundation for Lone Soldiers, which directly supports foreigners joining the Israeli army, spending between 5.5 and 6.5 million Canadian dollars annually. McGill University holds over $73 million worth of investments in over 50 companies linked to Israel. Despite years of opposition from pro-Palestine activists, neither institution has shown any interest in breaking these ties. But Samar knows what she's up against, and she remains defiant.
I can't just take a break because people in Gaza, my family, are not taking a break in Gaza. So as long as this is still happening, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing, regardless of the location, but I'm trying to make it like more impactful and powerful and keep the pressure to hopefully make the Canadian government take a real action for the Palestinians.
Canada, like many other Western democracies, has seen a trend of growing repression of pro-Palestinian activism. In Montreal, the universities Concordia and McGill are in an ongoing and escalating battle between their administrations and an increasingly militant student movement. Students that I met described harsh disciplinary action, private security firms hired to surveil student activists, multiple court injunctions attempting to ban protest on campus, and clashes between armed police and students. Whilst I was there, the week after October 7, 2024, McGill's campus was on lockdown and crawling with security guards in anticipation of actions highlighting a year of genocide. A month after I left, thousands of students mobilised for a strike in protest of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly held in Montreal on November 21st. The demonstration was met with disproportionate aggression by Montreal police. Three young people were arrested and many were injured. Since Samar has become a recognisable face in the citywide movement, it seems that a target has been placed on her back. Her supporters told me that there is often a large police or private security presence at her busier sit-ins, and many activists describe being filmed by police officers or hostile passers-by. Samar has been arrested multiple times, once just for chalking slogans on the sidewalk, but she refuses to be intimidated.
I mean, this is part of how the system and the government, they are villainizing and dehumanizing Palestinians and pro-Palestine activists. And they're using these tactics of, you know, either arresting me or I was detained as well. It's not just arrests and conditions and stuff like that. It's to silence the movement, to scare off people and make them stop, because this negatively impacts the image of Canada being a country of human rights and liberties and stuff, which is not true. So they're trying all tactics and strategies to silence the movement by attacking me as being this visible and, you know, I'd say known in the movement. So if this happens to me, what about like other people that no one knows about? So I do understand why they're doing this, the government, the police, but I don't care. It's just all these things, they are just giving more visibility about what's happening here in Canada, of like the suppression of the movement, the people. And it's kind of like an extension to what's happening in Palestine, you know, all these tactics. It's on a different scale, but this is something that's happening in Palestine, in Gaza, to hide the truth, to blackout, you know, about what's happening in Palestine.
In early September, Samar and two of her comrades were served arrest warrants on charges of mischief and criminal harassment of Mark Miller and his staff, after Samar approached and spoke to the MP outside a Liberal Party campaign office downtown. The three activists turned themselves into a police station, where they were then detained for over 24 hours. Upon their release, they were placed under various conditions, including a ban from talking to the media about the case. When I spoke to Samar in October, she was still under these conditions, which is why we didn't discuss this incident or the ongoing case in the conversation that you're hearing. But since then, on October 29th, all of the charges against Samar and her comrades have been dropped, after the prosecutor was shown video footage from the day which proved that the interaction between Samar and Mark Miller had not been accurately represented by the complainants. Samar's attorney, Barbara Bedon of the Defend the Movement Pro Bono Clinic, expressed her outrage at Mark Miller's failure to intervene in this miscarriage of justice, thereby allowing innocent citizens to be detained over false accusations.
He has to answer, why did he not come forward to prevent this miscarriage of justice? He is a member of the Canadian government, and so he has certain responsibilities, and I would like an answer for that.
On December 4th, a coalition of local Palestine solidarity groups held a press conference announcing their call for Mark Miller's resignation and demanding an independent public investigation into police repression of pro-Palestine activism in Montreal, of Samar, of students, and of the anti-NATO protests.
Me going through these painful experiences of being arrested, although I'm doing these peaceful sit-ins and protests, as you said, it reveals the real face of the West in general and Canada, that they're promoting, you know, liberties, freedom of speech, the right to protest. I'm aware and I know all my rights as a Palestinian mother that's living in Canada, that what I'm doing is lawful, it's legal. And yet I'm being confronted by police violence, by all these restrictions and conditions imposed on me after each arrest. I decided to go through that experience because I knew that if they continue to arrest me and impose conditions that are heavily aiming to silence my actions, then it's going to go worse. So I don't care, like, nothing's going to stop me. I know what they're doing is the wrong thing, the government and the police, and what I'm doing is lawful. What I'm doing is something I'm doing for my own people, for the Palestinian people's right to self-determination, to have an independent state, to have the rights, their full rights, basic rights that are being violated on a daily basis in Palestine, and what's happening to my people and family in Gaza. I mean, what I'm going through here is nothing compared to what's happening to them. So that gives me the fuel, the motivation to go on and speak up and stand up for my own people.
Hi, I'm Amy Hall, and I'm one of the co-editors at New Internationalist magazine. We're fiercely independent, and we're able to stay that way thanks to the incredible support of our readers and over 4,600 co-owners. By buying community shares in our cooperative, readers can fund in-depth, high-quality journalism which confronts injustice on a global scale. If this sounds exciting to you, visit our website, newint.org, to find out more.
Since she began her sit-ins, Mark Miller has refused to meet with Samar. Neither Indigo nor McGill have publicly commented on Samar's actions outside their doorsteps.
We're not white, we don't have blue eyes, so we're completely ignored on that level. I know that it's going to take time until we have any response that could be positive for the Palestinian cause in general. That's why I'm keeping my action consistent and happening, you know, on a daily basis. But what's sad for me is that this time is blood in Gaza. It's lives of innocent people. But I can see that there's kind of like change happening. There's more awareness happening. The education that we do to people that get surprised about like things, like, let's say, Indigo. We tell them about how they're complicit. They're like really shocked and surprised. Like, oh, we didn't know about this. So the amount of education and awareness that's happening, for me, that's important. And this is where change, you know, starts and happens. Again, it's sad that the price of this education and awareness and change is blood and lives in Gaza. But there's no change over history happened, you know, overnight. And it's sad, but it gives me hope that there's something that's going to happen at the end. We don't know when exactly, but I'm sure it's going to happen.
A broad coalition of activists in Montreal have been brought together by Samar's bravery and her infectious determination. University students, Muslims, teenagers, immigrants, First Nations groups, and more have all united in their opposition to such obvious injustice, and it's clear how widely loved Samar is by many in her community. In June, when students occupied an administration building at McGill, they renamed it Jana's Hall. Every evening, when Samar sits outside the gates of the university, Jana's photograph is projected against the walls for the whole street to see.
No, it's not easy for, you know, everyone to do certain actions and show up for Palestine for different reasons. But for people to do their best, you know, at least, you know, wearing a keffiyeh is powerful. Saying free Palestine is powerful. Educate people about what's happening in Palestine, even within their own, you know, close and small circles. All these small gestures, they all contribute to the bigger change that I was talking about. This awakening happening in the West, for me, is really important because people have been conditioned and brainwashed for so long. And now it's no longer happening, you know, thanks to social media and all the people that are speaking up. It is like scary time that we're living in. It could be discouraging for some people. But looking at the bigger picture, what's happening in Palestine, it's not only about Palestine. It's about Congo, Haiti, Sudan, Lebanon as well, and other countries that have been colonized and oppressed. And if people are not going to take an action right now, like people who think they're safe and distanced from what's happening in Palestine, there will come a day that they're going to be regretting this, that this is going to happen to them as well. So when they stand up for Palestine, they're standing up for themselves and for humanity in general. So this is something I feel it's really important, because a lot of people that we talk to, they just look away, or like, you know, that's none of our business. We're not part of this conflict. No, you are. Your tax money goes there. Your silence is complicity, because you can't be neutral at this point, because if you're neutral, you're on the wrong side of history as well.
That was Samar Alkdor, a Palestinian activist in Montreal. You can keep up with her daily protests by following her on social media, and you can read more about her story in the show notes. That's it from us. Thanks for listening to this new podcast series from New Internationalist. We're an independent media cooperative based in the UK, and we're proud to be co-owned by our readers and staff. If you like the show, and if you want us to make more episodes like this, please leave a review in your podcast app. It really helps people to find us. Listeners to the show can also get 20% off their first year of a print or digital subscription to New Internationalist by using the promo code TheWorldUnspun at checkout. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Paula Lacey. I'm the editorial assistant at New Internationalist. Co-editors of the magazine are Amy Hall, Bethany Riley, Comrade Landon, Maxine Betteridge-Mose, and Nick Dowson. Our theme music was produced by Samuel Raphael Williams, and our logo design is by Mary Foods. Audio editing is by Naseek Hamza. Special thank you to Impress, the UK's independent media regulator, for helping us get this podcast off the ground. See you next time.